Episode 156 of the Aggressive Progressive Podcast. They're just radicals. Let's start the show.
We are now the defenders of the stronghold of democracy and of equal opportunity.
Hi, I'm Christopher Hahn. Welcome to the Aggressive Progressive Podcast. Thank you for liking, rating, reviewing, subscribing, telling your friends, and following me on Twitter. I'm at Christopher Hahn there. Christopher Hahn NY on Instagram. I mean, they're getting more radical by the day. The GOP in Pennsylvania elected a governor who said, yeah, you could vote. If I just don't like the results, I'm going to change them myself. I'm going to appoint a Secretary of State that will agree with my results. And then former President Trump on Truth Social just over the weekend suggesting that a new civil war is coming. And, you know, he doesn't want a civil war because he has any real ideological difference between progressives and conservatives. He has an idea for a civil war because America doesn't love him anymore. And he wants the people who love him to pick up arms and kill the people who don't love them. That's his thinking here. It's not for any great ideological thing. I mean, I know that, you know, people on the right want to point to Trump's ideology and his policies. Nonsense. The man abandoned everything the GOP stood for, and the GOP went right along with them because they only really stood for power. I'm talking to Reid Gallen from the Lincoln Project, one of the founders of the Lincoln Project, in a few minutes right here on this podcast. We talk all about that. It is exactly what they stand for. They stand for nothing. They stand for power, raw power, and nothing other than power. And they want to hold on to that power, whether the people want them to have that power or not. They are radicals, they are un-American, and they want to paint progressives and Democrats as people destroying America, yet they have this ridiculous fascist streak within them, this totalitarian. They are tilting towards dictatorship. If the election, of the Republican nominee for governor in Pennsylvania, Doug Mastriano, if that doesn't show you their colors, just look at what this guy has said. Just look what he said, not before he won the Republican primary, which was pretty much a short bet. Look at what he said after the primary. I mean, this is a man who is just too radical for America. And you know what? I don't think they're going to win that seat. I think it's a rough year to be a Democrat in this country. But I don't think that the voters in Pennsylvania want a governor who will just ignore their vote, right? And believe me, this guy will not concede defeat. We talk about this with Reid in a little while. You know, Donald Trump's out there telling Dr. Oz to claim victory. And Dr. Oz is up by a little bit in the Pennsylvania Senate primary, but is clearly not over. They've got many, many absentee ballots to count in Pennsylvania. That's what we do in America. We count the votes. They don't end on election night if there are absentee ballots to vote. Now, look, I'm a big believer in that we should be counting absentee ballots before election day so that on election night we have a really good tally of it. And I know in Pennsylvania they do that for most of them, but you still have time under their law to get those ballots in. They need to be postmarked by a certain date. Then you've got to give a week for mail, maybe more now because of Postmaster General DeJoy and what Donald Trump did to screw up the mail when he was president. But that's who they are. And to quote Maya Angelou, when people show you who they are, believe them the first time. I believe them. I believe that guys like Doug Mastriano will subvert the will of the people for his own pure political power if he is given the opportunity to do that. And I'm hoping to God that the people of Pennsylvania do not give him the opportunity to do that. You know, these people never accept defeat. Where I'm from on Long Island, there's this group called the Allowed Majority, and they were very active in school board races. And they lost most of the school board races that they were in that were competitive races. They had a couple of people win in areas where there wasn't a lot of competition. And then they tried to glom on to other races that they didn't even endorse in because the candidates who were running for school board, which is a very nonpartisan thing here on Long Island, happened to be registered Republicans. It was kind of funny. The Loud Majority lost the majority of what they participated in last week. And I'll tell you this, when you're the majority, you don't really need to be loud because you're the majority. And just
by the purpose, you know, just by the fact that you are the majority, you are louder than other people because there should be more of you. What we see here with the Long Island Loud majority and these other right-wing ultra-MAGA groups around the country who are pretending to represent everybody, they've got to be really loud and obnoxious to get attention because they represent no one. They are not even the majority within the Republican parties. They are just the people who show up for primaries, and we should be very, very suspicious of them. Look, I'm taking some heat for this. I believe there are good people on the right. I believe there are good people in the Republican Party who just have different views on how to govern than I do. They have different views on what the direction and the priorities of this country should be than I do. The problem we have, though, with them is they are not speaking up. They are having their voices drowned out by groups like the Loud Majority, by groups like MAGA, by people like Doug Mastriano. It is time for the good Republicans to step up and to take a stand against Trump and these people who would bring this country to its knees, to end our Democratic Republic. It is time for them to speak up. All right, I'm not going to waste any more time. I've got a great guest, Reed Gallen. You're going to love it. Stick around for that, and I'll be back to wrap up the show. Joining me now, Reed Gallen is a co-founder of the Lincoln Project, and he's been on the show before, and it's been a while. Reed, how you doing?
I'm well, Chris. How are you? Thanks for having me back.
I'm doing great, man. Always good to have you back. You're always a great perspective. So, you know, before we get into, you know, the choice debate or January 6th committee and everything's going on, big primary in Pennsylvania. Dr. Oz seems to be winning the Senate primary. But he hasn't won yet. Yet the former guy, Donald Trump, is trying to get him to claim victory, which is kind of funny because, you know, it's just a ballot position.
Right. He has a habit of doing that, doesn't he? It's true or not. I guess the truth has never gotten in Donald's way, has it?
No, it's never gotten in his way. And frankly, you know, if he thinks that the Democrats are the ones who are going to steal it from him, and I think the Democrats would rather run against Dr. Oz than what's the other guy's name? McCulloch?
Dave McCormick.
McCormick, that's right. I mean, Dave McCormick.
I think that's probably right.
Yeah, I mean, Dave McCormick seems. I mean, look, he's kissed Trump's ring like everybody else, but Trump also said a lot of nasty things about him, which can be wind up in political ads against him. But he's kind of more of a mainstream former, you know, kind of a Pennsylvania type Republican. Whereas Dr. Oz, people are calling him Dr. New Jersey. I think it's a clear, you know, I think the clean shots at Dr. Oz for the Democrats.
Well, I think that's right. And a couple of things. One is that, yeah, not only is Dr. Oz from New Jersey, he's a TV doctor, right? He his first name is Mehmet. And I hate to say that anyone's name, especially in modern day America, would matter. But to a lot of people of the T of Pennsylvania, it might. And that, you know, he also, you know, this is the kind of guy who, you know, he's like buddies with Oprah.
Right.
Right. He has no, you know, he has no political background to speak of. And so I think it's one of those things that he is more vulnerable. But if you had told me that somebody was going to be talking about a, you know, U.S. Senate race between a TV doctor and a Democratic lieutenant governor who looks like a professional wrestler, I don't think anybody would have seen that coming.
No. I mean, Fetterman, he not only just like Jesse Ventura, he looks like Jesse Ventura.
Right.
Like a less fit Jesse Ventura.
Right. Well, and you know, and that's the other part too, is right. I mean, you know, the guy just had a stroke. You know, he had to go to the hospital for a procedure, I think, to put in a pacemaker and something else. And so, yeah, I mean, you know, this is one of those things where the variables of the race far outweigh the constants.
Yeah. I mean, what do you make of it though? I mean, do you think, like, look, I think that if it's Dr. Oz, I think the guy's got a very good chance. I think if it's the other guy, I am not sure that it goes the Democrats' way.
Well, look, I mean, Dave McCormick is, you know, I believe he, you know, he was, you know, he served in the military. I believe he served in the George W. Bush administration. You know, he is, you know, he's a billionaire investment type guy. Yeah, he wants, you know, he had to go to the Trump faction as best he could in the primary, because that's what the, you know, the MAGA in Pennsylvania is probably more purely concentrated than it is just about anywhere else.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, you know, he could also be, if he plays his cards right, you know, sort of a Mitt Romney type.
Right. Well, I mean, that would be,
I think that, yeah,
that would be my biggest fear, is that he makes that nice sharp turn to the center, which I think he's probably more capable of doing. I mean, Dr. Oz will try to make the sharp turn to the center. He should be capable of doing it. But I think in Dr. Oz's case, it might turn people off.
Right. Well, that's the thing, is that I think that, yeah, I think that's right. I think you also take into.
Uh-oh, I lost you.
Hold on 1 second.
Yep. Hold on a minute. I'll just mock time in my show here while he gets to a better phone location.
Let me know when you're ready.
I'm ready. You ready?
Yeah. So just re-up me, and then if you can cut this.
Oh, no. It's live. There's no cutting it. I'll cut it out of the podcast, but this is going over the air. It's on in 27 markets, my man. It's okay. No, don't worry. Right.
Well, hello, everybody.
Hey, I'm happy to look. I'm always happy to have a member of the Lincoln Project. And I remember when Reed was like, you know, like you were like the fifth Beatle in the Lincoln Project for a while, even though you were one of the main founders. And I would always try to get other people, and they'd be like, how about Reed? Now I got to book you like a month in advance. You got your scheduler calling me. Your star has risen, Reed.
Oh, I don't know about all that. But listen, I think that, you know, there's also a dynamic here, which is Mitch McConnell would much rather have Dave McCormick in the United States Senate than Dr. Oz. And that, you know, Dr. Oz is going to, who knows what he'll do, right? But he'll probably side with Trump, which means he'll side with Cruz and Josh Hawley and Tom Cotton and all these other goons. Whereas, you know, all things considered for, you know, the U.S. Senate, Dave McCormick, probably not that bad a replacement for a Pat Toomey, who's retiring this year.
Right. I mean, Pat Toomey was a pretty middle of the road. I don't understand why Joe Biden wasn't able to get Pat Toomey to work with him a little bit more. You know, during his time, you know, in the last 2 years, especially since he announced he was retiring pretty soon after the, you know, after Biden got elected. So I don't understand why Biden didn't spend any time really working him.
I don't either, but, you know, both he and Rob Portman from next door in Ohio, both were pretty, you know, go along to get along guys in the Trump era, right? There wasn't a lot of times when they stood up. They were not, let me just put it this way. They weren't profiles in courage.
Right. Yeah. Nobody's really been a profile in courage these days on the right. I've been saying this a lot, and people have been criticizing me on the left for saying it, is I believe there are a lot of good people on the other side. I just don't feel like many of them are standing up enough. And I don't understand why. I feel like your job as an elected official, especially a member of Congress or the United States Senate, is to protect the Republic, especially if you're in the Senate. And you would think a guy who's retiring like Toomey would be willing to do that.
One would think, but I think he's probably more worried about whether or not he can get a gig on CNN or Fox or, you know, some corporate board position.
Yeah, but don't you think being like a stand-up member of the Senate who did the right thing and helped save the country would help him get like a corporate board gig or something like that?
One would think, but I don't think that's been in his calculus, unfortunately.
Because I don't see a lot of these Trump stooges winding up on corporate boards. In fact, I don't see any of them on any corporate boards, really. I mean, you know, maybe on the My Pillow board or something like that, but they're not winding up on Nabisco or Hershey or anything big.
No, but, you know, they're not going to do anything about anything, right? I mean, the mistake that Toomey and his ilk make is that somehow the world will pass them by, but it doesn't. It never passes.
Everybody thinks that these things will all work themselves out. And then here we are, you know, really 6 years into the Trump era, right? I mean, he's not president anymore, but we're 6 years
in. Seven, really.
Seven, yeah. 2015. And nothing has worked itself out. In fact, I feel like it's gotten worse.
Oh, there's no question it's gotten worse. And in fact, I could make an argument, if you want to stay in Pennsylvania, Chris, that in fact, Donald Trump opened a Pandora's box, the monster got out, and it got past him. And I don't think he has any real interest in controlling it. This Doug Mastriano, who's the Republican nominee for the governorship there, is the true definition of ultra MAGA.
Yeah.
I mean, he talked about how in Pennsylvania, the Secretary of State is an appointed position. He's going to appoint somebody. He's going to get rid of all the voting machines. I mean, where do you think he's going to get rid of the voting machines first? Do you think he's going to get rid of them in Chester County, in York?
No.
In Wilkes-Barre, or do you think he's going to get rid of him in center city Philadelphia?
No, he's going to do everything he can to make sure that Democrats can't vote and people of color can't vote. I mean, first of all, I think this guy's got to be stopped. I think that's got to be the number one priority of Democrats in America, to stop this guy from getting elected. He seems to be a maniac to me. You know, and it just seems to be the pure definition of what the right has become in America. And again, where are the people standing up? I mean, that wasn't even a close primary. I mean, he won easily.
He did. But that's, you know, again, I think Pennsylvania is one of those places where, you know, in that T of Pennsylvania, it goes sort of up through York and Harrisburg and then out to, you know, Erie on the left.
Yep.
and Scranton, Wilkes-Barre on the right, even further north than that. You know, that's highly concentrated MAGA.
Yeah.
Right. That's really, and then you mix that with sort of the soft Republicans of the collar counties of Philly, the collar counties of Allegheny County, which is Pittsburgh. And, you know, Donald Trump wins.
Yeah.
Especially against, you know, a candidate like Hillary Clinton.
Yeah.
He didn't obviously win against Joe Biden because Biden could bring some of those people back.
So Reed, tell me how the Democrats are going to screw up this choice issue that was handed to them here in November. I feel like it's coming. I feel like we're overreaching in certain places. And I'm wondering what your thoughts on it. I mean, you're a guy who started your career on the right. You've moved to the center. I think the center's where the race has to be won, especially in a midterm year. And I feel like we're messing this up.
Well, I think there's a couple of things. One, I think when the initial leak happened, I think there were far too many Democratic elected officials who were like, this is great. We're going to win in November. Thank you for the gift, Supreme Court.
Right.
And I think that is too optimistic, that it is an issue that has been, you know, a political football, unfortunately, for 50 plus years in this country. And I think what the Democrats need to understand is that, you know, I think a lot of times they believe their base is not the voters out in the states, but the well-funded special interests in D.C., New York, L.A., San Francisco. And so, you know, and they overlook the fact that, you know, a lot of the members, a lot of base Democratic voters, whether or not that's Asian Americans, African Americans, Latinos, you know, rural and exurban Americans, may not be against abortion, right? Or they might not be for the craziness we're hearing, but they're not pro-abortion, right?
Right.
They're probably pretty significantly more culturally conservative than your average, you know, Brooklynite.
Yeah, they're pro-choice, but they don't want to, like, encourage people to get abortions. They'd like to try to make up, like, Bill Clinton had it right. Safe, legal, and rare.
Right.
Right. So, right. I think that's where the center is.
It is. And then I think that it was a very tough thing for a lot of Democratic candidates. The vote that Schumer forced in the U.S. Senate last week, in which, or maybe it was earlier this week, I'm not even sure, but it was basically an abortion on demand bill, which has like 10% of support in this country.
Right. Codify Roe would probably pass.
Right. If you had just said keep Roe v. Wade as is, you first of all, why not? But I think this is, again, where you're getting pressure from people. I mean, Chris, I'll just give a little tough love here. Like in places like Texas and Mississippi and some of the other places where these bills passed in 21, I assume Planned Parenthood had lobbyists in those states.
Yeah.
I assume they had operations in those states. You know, SB 8, the bill that's, I think, awful in many ways in Texas, passed a year ago. It didn't pass in September. It took effect in September.
Right.
And so I think now, you know, it's like, oh, well, this is going to be a boon to our fundraising. This is going to bring back suburban white women. Like, it might, but this now I'll bring the Republican side in, like you asked me to, which is, if I were a Republican strategist still, and you've already seen this because they tried to do it to Tim Ryan in Ohio, I'd get every reporter I could ask to ask Tim Ryan or whoever it is, are you for third trimester abortion? Are you for partial birth abortion? And you can watch them spin as they're trying to figure out whether or not they want to be in the place they should be, which is for some more, you know, just for Roe v. Wade, safe, legal, and rare, just say
right.
That. Or do they feel like they have to toe a line for a special interest? And whichever way that they go, Republican campaigns will probably run horrific ads with photos and videos of third trimester abortion and partial birth abortion and say, Tim Ryan supports this.
Right.
And then Tim Ryan has to defend that position and has to push it back, you know, and in the face of which, you know, I use him just because he was the first one, I think, to get asked, but there will be tens of millions of dollars to do that.
Yeah.
As opposed to what I would do, which is what we saw President Biden do last week, which was he called the Republicans ultra MAGAs. Then he said, and Rick Scott and Republican leaders want to raise taxes on working class Americans on half the country and get rid of Social Security and Medicare. And why do we know it works? Well, because one, you know, entitlements, Chris, have been the third rail of American politics, but, you know, sort of the overgrowth hid them for a while. Rick Scott, thankfully, you know, because if he's not very good at his job, brought those things, all that brush back. But the Republicans flipped out. They freaked out because they know that that's a bad issue for them. If I had any advice for my Democratic friends, it would be to run Rick Scott and Republicans want to raise your taxes.
Yeah. Show the plan that he put out that Mitch McConnell was horrified. Mitch McConnell didn't want people to know what he was really thinking before the election. He even said it.
And look, and look, there is a 54-second clip, which the Lincoln Project has posted. You can find it on our YouTube and our Twitter page, of John Roberts, a host on Fox, taking Rick Scott to the woodshed. And Rick Scott says, oh, these are Democratic talking points. And John Roberts says, it's in the plan.
Yeah, this is your plan that you put out.
And it says Fox News on the side. So you can even run it to Republican.
Yeah.
Right. And so this is the kind of stuff where consistently we say this, you know, Rick Wilson, one of my co-founders in his first book said, culture wars are where Democrats go to die.
Yeah.
Roe v. Wade has the chance to be not any different. If you want to stay on something that people care about in a time of rising cost of living and rising and stagnant wages or maybe slightly increasing wages, like make it economic. I mean, 92, it's the economy, stupid.
It's always the economy. But I do think choice can animate parts of the base that don't normally come out in midterms, which could be good, but they got to use it correctly. They can't overreach. They can't just say we're for abortion. They got to say choice. There's a reason why we call it pro-choice, not pro-abortion. We're for the right of the woman, not the right of the state to make that choice, that decision. Who should the choice be with, not the government? I think it's a very, quite frankly, it's a conservative issue.
Well, and that's the other part, too, is, you know, this is where the Republican Party has devolved. If the three legs of the Republican Party for decades were individual liberty, a muscular and moral foreign policy, and fiscal responsibility and conservatism, that's all gone.
It's gone.
The legs have been sawed off, right, and rebuilt with cinder blocks of awfulness. And
by the way,
other way,
and they're sitting in the dirt. So Reed, again, you're right. The three stools of what used to be conservatism in the Republican Party, they're all gone. They don't matter anymore. And again, I know we touched on this.
They're impediments to what they want to do.
Yeah. Yeah. It's like, you know, personal responsibility, which is why I always, you know, choice and marriage equality, things like that. Like if you're truly conservative and you want people to have personal liberty, why would you be against those things? It doesn't make any sense to me, especially, you know, marriage equality. I mean, how people want less government involvement in their life would determine who people can love is beyond me. But I guess they had some sort of weird connection to that. But, you know, let's talk, you know, in the few minutes I have left with you, I want to switch gears and talk about January 6th, because every day I feel like there's new revelations. Today, Politico, gave a story about a couple of things about the presidential photographer basically had photos of like every 10 minutes of Donald Trump that day. And of course, Donald Trump dissed her by not allowing her to publish her book. So hell hath no fury. So that's going to get payback. And of course, you know, the committee subpoenaing members of the House who gave tours on January 5th. And, you know, I know you've been following this very closely. I know you wrote something about Mike Lee and his involvement and his change. And you're from out in that part of the country. So, you know, let's just dive into it.
Well, so I got asked this question the other day at a meeting, which is, do you think voters care about January 6th? And I said, it's our job to make them care. Well, what if it's not polling very well? I don't really care. You know, polling is when you base a campaign on polling, you're following something. You're not leading.
Right.
Right. If I had been in charge of this, the January 6th committee after winter break would have had their first hearing on January 6, 2022.
Yeah.
And they would have had them 3 days a week up until this moment and all the way through Election Day.
Yeah.
They would have hauled people up and they would have subpoenaed everybody within, you know, 200 miles of this thing. And what I think you see here, Chris, is the what we'll call the normalcy bias of Washington, D.C., right? Which is, I think there are probably a lot of members or several members of that committee who don't like this. They want to talk about policy. They want to talk about prescription drugs. They're afraid that if they do this, the Republicans will do it to them. Newsflash, they're going to do it to you. No matter.
Yeah, what do you think is going to happen? You think they're going to be nice guys when they get in? Come on.
Yeah, you know, they did Benghazi for 3 years for the sole purpose of driving down Hillary Clinton's chances of being president.
Right.
You can make an argument. It helped.
It worked.
And so, so I think that, you know, you see these dribs and drabs, and I think it's fine, but it needs to be a steady stream of it. The other reason, too, is the one thing we take as an article of faith at the Lincoln Project, Chris, is you must make your opponents react.
Yes.
You want Republicans on defense. If you mixed nonstop, you know, end-to-end coverage of January 6th, right, and all the people involved, and there will be members of Congress and the United States Senate and the president's team from all over the country, right, it'll get national press coverage with an economic message that Republicans want to do this to you, you got a fighting chance.
Yeah.
But if you're going to worry about why Joe Manchin won't help you, you know, pass Build Back Better, and you're going to make your members take shitty votes on abortion, pardon me.
That's okay. They got it.
you know, then you're going to lose.
Yeah.
These things are not complicated, Chris. Like, everybody thinks that you need to overcomplicate this. They need to lead on the issue. They need to lead on democracy. They need to lead on these bad candidates who not only are bad people. Doug Mastriano in Pennsylvania was at the Capitol on January 6th.
He sure was. He
went in. Right. Right. These are bad people. And the other part, too, Chris, is they have no interest whatsoever in government. They don't care.
No, they have no. You know, you think you got people have got problems in this country. The economy is a problem in this country. You think Doug Mastriano cares about that? No. He just wants permanent power.
Why do you think that down in Florida, Ron DeSantis wants to talk about Disney? Why? Because he does not have any answer for, nor does he want to spend one second on the fact that Florida has had the highest cost of highest and fastest cost of living increase in the country.
Right.
That's why he passes this stuff, because it's red meat for the ultra mega base, and it distracts people from the fact that their rent went up $1,000 month over month.
Right? Yeah.
That's all this stuff is. And if you and whether or not it's DeSantis in Florida or Abbott in Texas or some of these other people, you don't even have to make up the messaging, Chris. It writes itself. It's all true. It's the same thing we saw in 2020 with Trump. They do these things. They say these things. As a matter of course, they're not even afraid of it.
Right. It's their policy. It's who they are. But why do you think
they're united only by one thing, and that's the desire for power.
And they don't. And when they get the power, they don't do anything with it. It's just power for power's sake, which is just against who we are as a country. It's amazing to me. And you make a great point about the normalcy bias, which is probably why Democrats have not realized that for the last 8 years or so, there has been no normalcy on the right. I mean, that's why people like you left the Republican Party. There's no normalcy coming from them. And you can't, like they say, you can't bring a knife to a gunfight.
Well, that's right. And I mean, I think, you know, look, the normalcy bias affects and infects many, many Americans, right? They want the noise to stop. They want the crazy to stop. They just want it all go away, right? They don't, frankly, Chris, like Republicans, they don't really like Democrats. They're sort of sick of everybody and no one will be quiet.
Right.
But that, you know, in that regard, too, that is an escape hatch for Republicans who hate their party and hate the things that Doug Mastriano says or Donald Trump says, to say, well, it doesn't really matter anyway. I'll just pull the lever for these guys, as opposed to saying, wait a second, like, if I don't do what I need to and hold my nose and vote for a Democrat, big D Democrat this time, then, like, it's not going to work out for me. I mean, Chris, how often in life, personal or, you know, or historical, has ignore it and go away, it'll go away, been a good strategy?
It's never.
Very rare.
It never works. Ignore it and it'll go away is a way to die, quite frankly. You know, right. If you see a problem, you see a cancer. And quite frankly, I think Trumpism and MAGAism is a cancer. You got to cut it out. And that's, you know,
sure.
Democrats, look, I think Democrats are legitimately trying to cut it out. I think they do have a normalcy bias. I think you're absolutely right, which is why I have been frustrated why there hasn't been public hearings with the January 6th committee. And they're going to start next month. But what are they going to do? They're going to do 4 weeks of hearings and then take the summer off and then start them again in September. I don't know what they're going to do here. But I also feel like I said, you know, there are a lot of good Republicans who, unlike you, decided to let, you know, you left the party. You're fighting against this craziness. But there are a lot of good Republicans who are like, this will pass. Oh, maybe I'll use this to get power. You know, even like Kevin McCarthy, you listen to those tapes of him on January, you know, right after January 6th, talking to his leadership team. He was saying what you and I would be saying, that this guy's ridiculous. He can't be president anymore. We've got to stop this. And then 2 weeks later, he's down at Mar-a-Lago kissing the ring.
Right, because he that's what he believed, right, at the time. And then when he saw that it wasn't, you know, that the window had closed on decency, you know, he's like, well, I'm not, you know, I got to get back to where I need to be so I can be speaker, which I don't think is going to happen for him. Anyway.
He's never going to be speaker. And I think I'm the first person to say it to you. I remember saying it to you and you saying,
maybe, you know, you're probably right. But I mean, I think that, you know, you've got the true ultra MAGAs like Jim Jordan. And then you've got the newly minted MAGAs like, you know, Elise Stefanik, who, you know, want his proverbial head on a plate.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't know who becomes speaker, frankly. If I had to put money on it, I'd put my money.
Chris, I don't even know that it matters necessarily.
Right.
Even if it were McCarthy, you're going to get the same outcome.
Right. But I don't think it's going to be McCarthy. I don't think it's going to be Jim Jordan either, because it's kind of hard to call your opponent's pedophile when, you know, once he starts running for speaker, all that stuff that happened in Ohio State is going to be blasted all over the news every minute of the day. You know, I don't know how you do that.
His own people. And if it happens first, it'll happen by his own people. Because remember, Chris, the only people that they hate more than Democrats or regular human beings are each other. And it's by an order of magnitude.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. I think that happens with any leadership team in politics. It's sad, right? Unfortunately, there's no loyalty. But it, you know, I am still though waiting. I'm like waiting for somebody to join Liz Cheney and Adam Kinzinger and like just stand up and say, this is ridiculous. And I'm going to run for re-election. I'm going to win my election because this is ridiculous. And I don't know what you're seeing in any polling in Wyoming. Does Cheney have a chance?
I haven't seen any lately, but yeah, I think she absolutely has a chance. Aside from the power of incumbency, the fact that the Cheney name goes a long way. In a place like Wyoming, where I think also I believe that Democrats can switch over and vote in a Republican primary. So I think that they're, you know, if Democrats are smart, they will encourage thousands of Democrats to cross the line and vote for Cheney in the primary. Because I think that if she wins her primary, it is two things. One, not only is it an enormous black eye for Trump, which is a good thing, but it also said, I stood firm and I beat him.
Yeah.
Right. That means you can too, and you should also.
I think you're absolutely right. I actually been saying this, and some of my, you know, progressive guests have been like pushing back. I think it's important to the country that she wins. And I don't agree with her on almost anything on policy wise, but I don't think she's trying to destroy America. And she stood up to a guy who is trying to destroy America in her own party, and she's paid the price for it. And I think she needs to win now. And I think it's important that she does. Sure. So, you know, God help us. All right. So look, I got a minute left with you. I got to plug you. What's going on at the Lincoln Project? What do you want people to know? Where can people find you?
Yeah, sure. So you can find us on Twitter at Project Lincoln. You can find us on the internet on LincolnProject.us. I hope that you'll tune in to my podcast, the Lincoln Project Podcast, new episodes every Tuesday and Thursday on your favorite app. And you can find our streaming shows Monday through Friday, Monday and Friday at lunch with Lincoln, Tuesday and Thursday, The Breakdown with the one and only Rick Wilson, and the even more one and only Tara Settmeyer. And then Wednesday nights, we're speaking with Maya May and Lisa Senecal. We are not only a super PAC, but we got a lot of good information for folks, and we hope that you'll sign up.
Well, I love it. I love the work you're doing, Reed Gallen. Always great to have you on. Come back again real soon. All right. I hope you liked Reed. Reed's awesome. Always like talking to people from the Lincoln Project. Different perspective than mine, but I think they're doing the right thing here, and I truly appreciate that. I think that unless more people like Reed, who are former Republicans, start speaking out against what's happened to the Republican Party,
we're in trouble, especially this year. Look, I don't want to sugarcoat it. Gas prices on Long Island this week were $5.25 per gallon. And they may be going up from there. That does not bode well for the party of the president. And I am not blown away by the messaging out of this White House. I'm sure most of us aren't. It hasn't been great. And again, it's tough. I'm not saying that the problem with Democrats is we actually worry about fixing the problems and we forget about the politics until it's too late. And here we are forgetting about the politics and it's getting too late. So it's going to be a rough year. But Republicans have to take ownership of this problem. People who are like, oh, no, you know, they don't really believe that. No, they really believe that. Donald Trump on Truth Social, and I know not many people are on Truth Social. On Truth Social, talking about a civil war. Mastriano talking about how he's going to appoint a Secretary of State who will decertify any voting machine he tells that person to do. That is the face of the Republican Party. That is what we're facing right now in America. It's bad. And it needs to be addressed, not just by Democrats, not just by independents, not just by the media. It needs to be addressed by Republicans. So I'm glad that there are people like Reed Gallin out there and the Lincoln Project and others. And I know, look, again, I hear it from people all the time that no, you know, they're not really with us. I don't know what they're, you know, agenda is other than trying to stop these crazy conservatives from taking over the right in this country, which they clearly have. So somebody's got to push back from it other than me. Nobody's listening to me on the right, right? You're all, you know, you're liberals. You're listening to this podcast. On the right, they've got their own echo chamber and Republicans have a better time piercing it than I do, than Democrats do. Than Obama does, than the mainstream media does. So let's hope they keep doing that. All right, I want to remind you now, as I always do, to seek the truth, question everyone and everything, even me. Seek the truth. I know it's out there, and I know you'll find it if you look for it. And I'll be back here again next week to tell you the truth as I see it. I'm Chris Hahn. Thanks for listening to the Aggressive Progressive Podcast.